Well, good evening, brothers. Welcome to the Master Builder Call for March. This is March 18th, 2015. I want to welcome all of those who have joined the call this evening live, and I want to welcome those who may listen to it later on. As you know, we post that on the website after the call, so if you have obligations, a lot of lodges going, are meeting, a lot of inspections going on, so we know everyone's busy. But if you're listening later, welcome to you as well. I'm Mike Clevenger. Those of you who have listened previous times will recognize the name Michael Kirkab. He is with us tonight. Michael, how are you doing?
I am doing very well. Thank you, brother.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. As you know, we've been talking about his book, The Working Tools of Leadership, and tonight we've got another special guest who has another Masonic book out that I'll introduce him in a moment. But first of all, just for those who may be on the call for the first time, spend some time talking about tonight about Brother Dan Horenko's book, The Craft Driven Lodge, and you'll have an opportunity later on to ask him questions and be a part of the discussion as we get into the Q&A. While I'm talking about that, just so you know, someone sent me an email and said he wanted to ask a question the last time and didn't know how to do it. Well, when I turn on the Q&A, I will tell you about that, and all you will have to do is just punch star and six on your phone, and that'll pop you into the question queue, and then when your turn comes, I'll recognize you. I'll go over that again when we get to that section. I always do this, and I'd like to do this again, just a little description of what Masons Lead Better is. Masons Lead Better, of course, those who have been through the workshop in your district here in Ohio. We've done about half of those so far. We'll do another one this weekend. We'll be in the 22nd district up in Brooklyn, Ohio. And I believe it is Brooklyn Masonic Temple. So if you're on the call and listening tonight, we'll see you Saturday. But anyway, Masons Lead Better was designed as a personal journey of improvement. And during the workshop, if you've had that, you understand. And if you haven't, what you will do will be assessing yourself by discovering the values that are important to you, recognizing some of your leadership skills and other life skills, and the other areas in which you are, where you may excel, and then understand some of the importance of your family and other people in your life, and then finally discover how Masonry has made a positive impact on your life. And one of the things that I believe is important in the workshop is we'll go through some exercises so you can begin to study the tools and lessons of Masonry in a practical way. And instead of just sitting in lodge, we want to train you to listen for understanding so that you can use those in a practical way. So that's a little bit about Masons Lead Better. And we hope that if you've not somehow on this call and not had your workshop yet or haven't signed up, please do. Well, I want to get to our special guest tonight, and someone I've known several years and hope to get to know a little bit better. And without further ado, I would like to introduce Brother Daniel Horenko, who is here in Ohio and recently published a book. And I'm sure we're going to ask him about it, but I'm sure this was rolling around in his mind for a long time. And It's a great book. So with that, I'll say hello, Dan Horenko. How are you, brother?
I'm doing good, brothers.
Well, I appreciate, Dan, you taking the time to be here. Dan is taking on the job of a district deputy grandmaster this year in the 9th Masonic District, which is just west of me, and I know he's rather busy. So thanks, Dan, for the time. Why don't you do this, Dan? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, where you came from, and then end up with, you know, tell us how you came to join Masonry, what introduced you to the fraternity.
Well, I'm currently 59 years old, been married for 38 years to my wife, Lisa. I've got two kids who are both grown up, and I got two grandkids that are absolutely adorable. And I'm a lifelong resident of Springfield, Ohio, born and raised here. And, in fact, I even live in the house that I grew up in.
Oh, cool.
Looking forward to an opportunity to try to see if I can find a way to let my grandkids grow up there, too. But that's going to require some interesting problem solving, but that's neither here nor there. I'm a psychologist by profession, but don't get worried, I'm not analyzing anybody. I work only for the court system, and I only work with criminal defendants. So unless you're in jail and pleading not guilty by reason of insanity, I'm not interested in talking to you. But I did find that my professional training in psychology has been a huge benefit at helping me understand humans, people, human behavior, and that is, in essence, what Freemasonry is attempting to be a powerful influence on. I see Freemasonry as a system, as a structure by which we can explore truth, values, what constitutes good behavior, and help us, you know, to coin or restate that overly simplistic phrase, make good men better, but more importantly, make ourselves better men. And I can't do a lot to make anybody else better, but I can sure do a good job on myself if I pay attention to the lessons that are available in Freemasonry. Now, I became involved with Freemasonry due in part because it's a family tradition. My father was a Freemason, but not all that active, and all of his friends were Freemasons. And on my 21st birthday back in 1976, I was in graduate school, and I called my dad from Indiana and said, I'd like to join the lodge. Now, I didn't do that for any deep, powerful reasons about trying to learn about the secrets of the world or to claim my share of the untold treasures that are stashed somewhere. What I did that for was because it would be something that would bring Dad and I closer together. I'm a college kid. He's a high school dropout. I'm working with my brains. He's a carpenter working with his hands. And I'm interested in a lot of things that he just doesn't really wrap his head around. But Freemasonry was something that we could use as a common activity, as a common language. And so that was my original motivation. Now, some might say that that's the wrong reason to get involved because we ought to be there looking for enlightenment. And I can agree that enlightenment is a wonderful goal and one that we all should pursue. But I'm not too picky on why you came to the door. But I have become incredibly passionate about what should be happening after you knock. And that is a lot about what has gone into this book. My Masonic career began in 1977 when I was initiated in February, passed in March, and raised in April of 1977. And I happened to be what everybody called a good ritualist, which meant I could learn the words quickly. And I learned all the words, and they put me in the line. And in 1983, I served as Master of Clark Lodge in Springfield, Ohio, at the tender age of 27.
Wow.
Making me the youngest man ever to be Master of Clark Lodge. But I have to confess even though I knew the ritual well and I was able to perform it and recite it, I really didn't know much about Freemasonry. I found myself asking questions of the old guys, and what I typically got was an answer like, "We don't know, we've just always done it that way." "What does this mean?" "I don't know." "Why do we do it?" "I don't know. We've always done it that way." And I found that frustrating, but I had no idea where to go. So I was curious. I felt that there was more to this fraternity than just the simple ritual I had been through, that there was a lot more meaning available, but I had no way of knowing where, why, or how to get it. No one had ever introduced me to a guy named Carl Claudy. No one had ever introduced me to Albert Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry or nothing. Well, life got in the way, and I started having kids, and I kind of got less active in Lodge. But about 10 years later, when the kids were starting to be a little more independent, I reconnected with the Lodge and started getting involved with the Ohio Lodge of Research because I was curious. Through there, I met some people who introduced me to the world of what Freemasonry could be. Now, the good news is I had a chance to learn to read and explore and to begin looking beyond just the superficial words of the ritual into all that was available in Freemasonry. The bad side of that was I got pretty angry because my lodge failed me. And
I was going to ask if you were frustrated at that point.
Yes, I was, but I was just enjoying the ability to start exploring things, like in the obligation there's a world hail, and I said it all the time, and I said it at the right time, and I said it in the right way, but I had no idea what that word meant or why it was in our ritual. And it was after I began to study that I learned about that word, and it helped me understand why it's there and why it's so important. And so, that is an example of what I had to discover on my own. So, in a lot of ways, I'm a self-taught Freemason, which I believe is a crime. So I've kind of made it my goal to share whatever I know with others so that nobody else has to suffer through what I suffered through, which is having to study Freemasonry all by myself. You know, a lot of guys will think that's not such a bad idea, but answer me this. Do you want to go to a self-taught heart surgeon? I'd rather around with Masons that are well-trained than Masons who are self-taught.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I began looking for lots of opportunities. In 2007, I had just got done being Master of Clark Lodge again in 2005. And I ran into a group of Masons in Columbus who were kind of like me. We wanted more from our meetings. We wanted a chance to talk and explore what Freemasonry was about, to go below the superficial words of the ritual and begin to really explore the meaning and lessons that are attached to each and every one of those words. And so for that, we began getting together for dinner once a month and talking about Freemasonry. And that grew into an informal group that we nicknamed the Goose and Gridiron Social Club. Now, for those of you that are up on your Masonic history, you'll recognize that Goose and Gridiron happened to be the name of the tavern where the four lodges met in London in 1717 to organize the first Grand Lodge. So we adopted that name, and we met on a regular basis. And in our conversations, we began to talk about the ritual, what it said, what it meant, how it could be performed, and exploring those opportunities. So we would then go to somebody's lodge room, meet, and we'd practice a ritual and look at the variations and the opportunities that are available. Now, as soon as I say something like that, usually there's a gasp somewhere where people are saying, "Oh, my God, you're innovating the ritual." And my response to that is we said the exact words that's in the ritual book. We didn't add any words. We didn't take any words out. but we did think carefully about what the words meant and looked at the way they were delivered. For example, in the opening of the Enter Apprentice degree in Ohio, we're asked, what came you here to do? And if you look at the book, there's a group of letters that represents words, a comma, and then another group of letters that represents words. Now, that means, if you look at it too literally, that there are two things we come to do. Well, nothing in Freemasonry is in twos. It's threes, fives, sevens, nines, other mystical numbers.
Right.
Now, if you add a comma between the first task, to learn, and pause, and then you go to the second part, and then the third part, now you have three distinct tasks about why we come to Lodge. And it expands the meaning of that phrase dramatically. We're not here to learn about subduing our passions.
No.
We're here to learn about everything. And that is consistent with the Middle Chamber lecture, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
we're also here to learn about subduing our passions, because that's a fundamental skill. And we're here to improve ourselves in Freemasonry. So now it's three things. But if you understand what that phrase is about, you can add that comma, take a pause. You're not changing the ritual, but you're changing the impact of the meaning. And suddenly, it means a lot more than just a string of words that you spit out of your mouth at the beginning of every Entered Apprentice degree.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, that phrase up, because I saw it in the book and I was going to ask you about it. I've had that discussion before and said, you know, should it be to learn, comma? No, oh no, no. Do you see a comma in there? No. So.
Well, you know, we've been doing it. I've been doing it for about 8 years, and whenever I stand in the West in the Entered Apprentice degree, I'll put that comma in, and somebody come up to me and he says, I've never heard it said that way, and I explain why I say it that way. And as of yet, no one from the Grand Lodge Ritual Committee has come down and told me to stop.
Yeah, that's great. Well, why don't you kind of, then this probably brings you up to the book and how it came to be. It must have came from all of this buildup over the years and the experience with arts and sciences, did it?
Well, it did, because the Goose and Gridiron Club, you know, we realized that if we wanted to really test out these ideas about a lodge becoming all it could be by integrating ideas from around the world and picking and choosing those that we thought would create the best lodge experience, we'd have to get a charter. And for some unknown reason, the brothers present at the one particular meeting said, I think Dan would make an excellent charter master.
There you go.
And I said, if you insist, I will, but it's definitely not a job that I seek. So, fate has it was, we became a lodge, and I became the charter master. And through the whole process of forming this lodge, we decided that we're all master masons. We're all masters of our trade, and none of us is superior to any others. We take the concept of being on the level very literally. So when it came to making decisions, now think about it. When you bring guys from 8 different lodges together, little things like how do the stewards turn the corner at the corner of the room can lead to some interesting discussions.
Okay.
And what I began to realize is that if I fell into the trap of being the guy in charge and therefore making all the decisions, that I'm going to be throwing a wet blanket on the enthusiasm and creativity of these guys who want to actively participate in creating a lodge that is their dream lodge. So there was one day when we were talking about the stewards turning the corners, and three guys said, well, in my lodge we do it this way, and another guy said, well, in my lodge we do it that way, and there was a slight disagreement, very calm and friendly, but a difference of opinion. And they all looked at me and said, Worshipful, tell us what to do.
Okay.
And I said, you guys, since everything we do in this lodge has to be with a purpose and an understanding about the meaning behind it, you three discuss what do you think the best way is to turn the corner in the lodge to make sure that it's done well, done precisely, and has some meaning to it. And when you figure out what the best way is, you let me know. And what I did at that moment was I empowered the craft to take responsibility for the operation of the lodge.
And that's the first principle in your book, right? Everyone has a voice.
That's exactly it. Because if nobody has a voice, then you feel like you're a passenger on a train with no say-so. And this also comes out of my experiences going through my old historic typical lodge where I'd say, hey, guys, why don't we do this? And the response was, well, when you get to be master, you can do whatever you want. But until then, we're going to do what the master wants. Okay? And what that mm-hmm. ended up with is, in the typical lodge I've experienced, is you get the master who does what he wants, and everyone else follows him like sheep. And if the master's a good master, good. If the master's an idiot, oh well, you know. The lodge puts up with it and says it's only a year and all that. So if no one has a voice and no one has a way of putting their ideas into the operation of the lodge, then you lose your enthusiasm for being active in lodge. And that is one of the big things, you know. When I visit lodges as a deputy and I ask them, what's your average attendance at meetings? And in my ninth district, there's only two lodges that average over 20. And they say, well, is there something better? And I went, oh, gosh, yes, you know. You know, arts and sciences became a lodge. And from day one, our average attendance has been almost 28 men per meeting. And we only had 24 members at the beginning. Mm-hmm. We now have 34 members, but 10 of them live out of the area, and we still average 28 men in a meeting. Lots of visitors. At our first inspection, I did a roll call of all the members of Arts and Sciences, and only two were not present. Everybody was there. And so by giving everybody a voice, they are now part of the team that runs the lodge. And anybody who has an idea has the opportunity, and it's the lodge leadership's responsibility, to give them an opportunity to have their say about what they think ought to be happening. Now, of course, that goes along with responsibilities. If someone says, I think we need to do a family picnic, then he's also just volunteered to chair the event, you know?
Sure. Well, sure.
You know, you want a family picnic?
He's got the idea, give him the job.
Convince me that it's a good idea, how it fits into our life at Arts and Sciences, and if it's a good idea and you can put together a good family picnic, let's see how it goes. And if it's a flop, okay, then we're going to say, guess we're not going to do that again, you know. And if it's a great success, wonderful. Guys will pitch in and help you with it. So that's the first principle for a lodge driven by the will of the craft. Well,
yeah,
I wrote first and foremost, to document what we did in Arts and Sciences Lodge and why. Because I've been getting so many questions about, I've heard about you, what do you do and why do you do it? I got tired of telling the same stories over and over and over and over and over again. So I figured I'd need to put down and document Arts and Sciences Lodge for future generations of Arts and Sciences brothers. Now, when I was traveling around the state and the lodge first started, there was two important comments I kept getting. I was accused of abdicating my responsibility as master because I let the craft chart the course for the lodge. And I said,
really?
I'm not abdicating my responsibility as master. My job as master is to make sure that all the Grand Lodge rules are followed, that all the work is done properly, and that the meetings are held in an orderly, organized basis. I'm also there, like any good chief executive officer, to respond to my customers. Who am I serving? I'm not serving the Grand Lodge. It's not my job to keep the deputy happy. It's my job to make sure that those brothers are getting the sonic experience that they want. And they tell me that every year at the annual meeting.
Didn't they agree upon, Dan? I mean, in the case of arts and sciences, they agreed upon what you all agreed upon, what you wanted to see. So
exactly.
it was your responsibility to make sure everybody kept on the same page and headed in the same direction, right?
Right. So when the brothers say, this is what we want out of our lodge experience, and we get that through discussions, many discussions over many months, okay? But it comes down to, this is what the brothers want from their Masonic experience, and it's my job as a master to organize the resources and to make it happen. You also need to realize that those guys on the sideline are your workforce. If what you're telling them you want done is not what they want to do, they're not going to work for you, and it ain't going to happen. So it's an interesting relationship. You are the CEO, and the guys on the sidelines are both your board of directors, telling you what you're supposed to be doing, and your labor force to put it into play. And if you're not in sync with them, it's going to be a really bad year for everybody. Okay? And that is the second point, second principle of my book, is that every Mason in the lodge has to see the vision. Everybody in the lodge has to have a good idea about where we're going and why we're doing this. Okay? And if everybody's not on board, then there needs to be some more conversations with those brothers to help them understand or have their input or modify the vision so the majority of the guys understand that that's what we're doing. Now, I will submit to you that the main purpose we have for lodges is not to pay the bills, read the minutes, and all that. Again, come back to our entered apprentice statement. Why do we come to lodge? To learn. Okay?
Right.
So if your lodge isn't teaching people stuff, then I contend that it's failing its purpose. But
as you know, Dan, a lot of the lodges you probably visit and the lodges that I've been to, you know, at a normal meeting, state of meeting, for example, education is kind of a checklist of the Grand Master, and you say, oh, we got to talk about something here.
And
it's an afterthought, not the main focus of the meeting.
And that's part of the crime. We've had so many years of working men through the superficial experiences that they don't know what they don't know. Okay? And I kind of equated this. If all you've ever had is hamburger your entire life, and somebody says, you know, I hear steak is really good, and you're going to say, so what? I like hamburger. I've been happy with hamburger all my life. But the guy says, you know, but steak is really good. You're not going to be too enthusiastic until somebody puts a bite of that steak in your mouth.
Right.
And then you're going to go, oh, my, this is what I've been missing. And one of the things that we wanted to do with Arts and Sciences Lodge was to show brothers, not talk about what's possible, but to show them what's possible, that these ideas that are in my book really work. And how do I know they work? Well, let's look at one important statistic, retention. Okay? How many guys come into your lodges, are active after 1 year, after 2 years, after 5 years? Okay? My guess is you're going to be looking at about 25, 30% after 1 year, about 20 to 15% the second year, and about 8% after that. Okay? At Arts and Sciences, when we raised our 12th brother, all 11 brothers who had been raised before him were there. We have 100% retention rate of the brothers who we've brought in and educated through Arts and Sciences Lodge because of the way we hold our meetings and the kind of experience you can have. Now, I'll say it right up front. My goal is to not make every lodge like Arts and Sciences. My goal is to make sure that every lodge has the ability to make its own decisions about the kind of lodge and the kind of lodge experience they want to have. We made the lodge we wanted the way we wanted it because that's what we wanted.
Right, right.
We may do a lot of things you don't like. That's okay. You don't have to do what we do. But we want you to make sure that you are empowered so that you can sit down as a lodge, have an intelligent discussion about what you think your Freemasonry ought to be like, and make your lodge like that. And that's where we get into the next phase. After we've had a chance for everybody to have a voice and everybody to be part of developing the vision, it means that every Mason has a role. Everybody's got a job to do. Because if you're not actively contributing to the success of that lodge, then you're not going to be passionate about its health and well-being. And unfortunately, our typical system today has everybody broken into two groups. Either you're an officer
or not,
or you're a spectator. Okay?
Right.
And that is really sad, because not everybody has the will, desire, or skills to be a good officer. So don't make them be an officer, but find a way for them to be active in the lodge. We got a guy in arts and sciences who struggles with memorizing anything. There's no way he's going to be an officer and not embarrass the heck out of himself. So we don't even expect him to do that. But he's a friendly guy. So his job is to be the ambassador. Whenever any stranger shows up, it's his job to go over, talk to him, make him feel welcome, find out about them, and make them feel like they're part of our brotherhood. Okay? That's
right.
What he's good at, and he puts that to work to the benefit of the lodge. That's great. Everybody has to have a job that makes that lodge move forward so that they're all part of the same team and they're all pulling their own weight to make the lodge succeed. Now, here is the last one. The fourth point is the real bugaboo. We all know that titles and power are pretty intoxicating. We can all look to somebody we know who spends their entire Masonic career chasing down as many titles and badges as he can possibly get his hands on, and he'll be the first to tell you about this whole list of titles when he introduces himself to you. It's written all over his apron, it's written all of his coat lapels, it's written all over his name badge. And by God, if you don't notice it, he'll make sure you do. Well, that's not what real leadership is about. If you look at the installation ceremony for the Master of the Lodge, he is to apply his Masonic principles to the best interest of the lodge. It comes down to the concept of being a servant leader. For that reason, I'm the Charter Master of Arts and Sciences Lodge. If you come to our meeting tomorrow night, you are not going to see me get introduced as a past master. You are not going to see me referred to as worshipful. You're not going to see me referred to as right worshipful. All titles that I am technically, you know, you're going to see me as Brother Dan Horinko, period, wearing a plain white apron, sitting on the sidelines like everybody else. If you become a member of Arts and Sciences Lodge, the only title that you will get is worshipful when you're actually sitting in the East. After that, everybody's a brother. Doesn't matter what other titles you may have accumulated. We want the leadership to be responsive to the members. They are servants of the craft. And for that reason, once you get that through your head, then the idea about how arts and sciences or any lodge can operate becomes a lot easier. And that's the fourth principle. So once I documented what happened with Arts and Sciences Lodge, what we do, why we do it, that's the whole second part of the book, I felt that it was important that I share with everybody the concepts and the principles, because if all I do is give you a how-to book, then you're going to take off your worn clothes, the suit of clothing, the way your lodge runs, it's not too comfortable, and you're going to adopt my suit of clothes. Well, my suit of clothes may not fit you, but if you read the book and go through these four principles as a lodge, then you're going to be designing your own suit. You're going to design your own lodge experience that will help you connect with Freemasonry in the way that you want to. You can keep the lodge traditions you have that you like and value, but you're free to dump all the other stuff that you've been doing all along that has no purpose, no meaning, and actually gets in the way. So that's kind of how I came around to writing the book and why I wrote it. I'm fortunate that McCoy Publishers has invested a lot of time and effort in helping me refine the book with the giving me access to professional editors. So this is not a self-published book where you get all kinds of bad writing like some I've seen out of different places. But this is a well-written, good book, and I think it's going to have a huge impact on Freemasonry, because it not only tells you options about how you can have a good lodge experience, but it tells you the why, the principles that you need to embrace to be able to take charge of your lodge. So,
well, yeah, and I, you know, I thinking through this as you described the process, given the way Masonry has been traditionally practiced, and this approach is going to be foreign. Have you got fear coming out as a reaction? In other words, oh my God, nobody would ever, you know, how do we start? How do we change things? I mean, everybody's fearful of change, and they're fearful that they'll drive away people because they change everything.
There's a lot.
You're not saying that. You say you decide what you want.
As a lodge, you decide what you want to do, and change needs to be evolutionary, but it needs to be thoughtful. For example, two guys in a lodge just north of me bought the book, talked with me a little bit about, and they saw in the book about how sometimes we purge the lodge, okay? And what most people don't understand that this is possible. In our ritual, the senior warden is to satisfy himself, and they always say yes. But what happens if he's not satisfied? Okay? What happens then? And the ritual is silent. Now, the attitude we've taken at Arts and Sciences is, if the ritual doesn't say I have to, and the code doesn't say I can't, then I'm free to take a thoughtful approach about what I should do that's consistent with Masonic teachings to resolve the situation. So if the senior warden says no, what do you do? Well, you can be rude and say, you, step out so we can examine you. Or you can do what I've seen other jurisdictions do. He calls the deacons up and ask the deacons to go down the north and the south to collect the pass grip and the password of whatever degree they're in. Grip and word of an EA, pass grip of a fellow craft, and pass grip of a master mason. So this lodge in Urbana did that. The master kind of stopped and froze in his tracks, and they collected the grip and word, and three past masters didn't know it. And it was an awkward moment. But the deacon instructed and reminded them, and they were satisfied by that. And then the senior warden was reported to by the deacons. And then they said, I'm now satisfied. And they went on with the opening. And then they did an education program about the concept of purging the lodge and that kind of checking and all that. And afterward, sure, those three grumpy old past masters says, damn it, this is the best experience I've had in lodge in years. We need to do more of this. These are the guys you're normally afraid of, you know?
right. Gotcha. Well, let me do this while we've got about 20 minutes left. I'm going to turn on the queue for the question and answer period. And, guys, again, I'll say if you want to ask a question, make a comment, talk about the concepts that Brother Dan has brought out, please hit *6 and you'll pop in the queue and we'll recognize you. Again, *6 on your phone will get you in there, and Dan or Michael or myself or anyone else may want to comment on what you have to comment about. So don't be bashful. We got Mr. Kirk. Brother Kirkab, you got the floor.
Great, thank you. Brother Dan, I'm really enjoying this, and you know, just listening, I really can't wait to read the book. I'm currently sitting master of Sandy Valley Lodge in Sandy Valley, Nevada. You know, as we were talking before it started, you know, this year we implemented the actual burning tapers to replace the electric tapers that we had for a while. And we just did our first EA using those tapers this month. And it was really quite beautiful. And a lot of the comments that we received from visiting brethren, as well as just our normal membership that shows up, was what a difference it makes. The experience, as you were talking about, not only for the new brother, but for brothers who had, you know, been through a lot of degrees and seen a lot of degrees, participated in a lot of degrees, even for them, it was something fresh and something new. And the way the light shines, you know, right there, it really, I think, inspired a lot of people to rethink about the ritual and, you know, just look at it with a fresh set of eyes. So I really think you're onto something. I'm really enjoying it.
Well, thank you. The whole point is to make sure that every Masonic meeting is one that when you walk out of the room, you say, damn, I'm glad I came. I can't wait to come back, you know? When we started Arts and Sciences Lodge, people would say, why do you want to join a new lodge? You're already in a lodge. And my answer was, if everybody wanted to go from point A to point B, we'd have one kind of car. But we don't. We have different kinds of cars because people have different tastes, likes, and desires. Why should we have one kind of lodge?
Yeah, it's, you know, and what Michael said, I can see, and I've been to Arts and Sciences, and you've got a particular way you open your lodge, and lodge is, I perceive it's something we, I'll say it this way. When you leave lodge, they say you are now about to quit the sacred retreat. Well, that says to me that the beginning of lodge should be something that allows you to clear your mind, forget about what happened during the day, and be in some kind of state of contemplation and learning. So if all you're doing is rapping the gavel and say, hey guys, shut up, we're going to read the minutes, that doesn't give me the experience that I think, Dan, you're describing here and Michael just described.
Well, Jeremy Cross wrote about that in 1818 in his book, and he talked about how the opening of a lodge is the transformation of an ordinary space into a sacred space for the express purpose of practicing speculative Freemasonry. And it's that concept that was behind that closing prayer. In Ohio, it's an alternate closing prayer. In Virginia and Pennsylvania, it's called a charge to the craft. It's given at the closing of the lodge. And that came out of Thomas Smith Webb's writings. So this is not a new idea. It's just an idea that people have forgotten for 100 years.
Yeah, I particularly, well, I do it in the Masons Lead Better workshop. I use that prayer at the end of the workshop because it speaks to what your duties are when you walk away. And you carry everything that you got in lodge that night, the love of your brothers, the inspiration from them, the values that you should be walking around and displaying. To me, that prayer speaks to all of those duties. And so I'm glad to hear you say it was a charge, because it does sound like a charge.
Questions from others?
Yeah. Somebody jump in here. Star 6, that'll put you in the queue. I'm sure Dan can answer any question you got. Right, Dan?
I'll do my best.
I know you will. Okay, we got somebody who took us up on the challenge. Brother Taylor. Good evening.
Hi. Good evening, brothers. I guess I just want to make a comment. I don't know if it's a question, but I really like that idea of addressing the worshipful and the rest of us as brothers. I thought it was just kind of a hang up that I had. You know, when I came to, when I first came into the lodge, it was kind of confusing where people would correct me on how to address right worshipful and worshipful, and you know, and I thought this was a fraternity, and people in my family don't address me as Mister, you know. And I didn't want to be disrespectful, but at the same time, it just I didn't feel the connection. It was more of a shoving away that I had to honor the title instead of being vulnerable or being personable with the person. You know, it's so much better when someone says, "Hey, Frank," you know. And I liked how you presented this. I think the first time I've really heard it, in which you know, I wasn't thinking it was disrespectful or paying homage to someone who had put a lot of time and effort into maybe some work to achieve a title, but you know, it wasn't the title that drew me to the individual; it was the individual,
the brother, right?
Yeah, it was the brother.
Any brother who's insulted because you didn't use his title has a lot to learn from what he's been saying but not understanding for many years.
Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate that comment. I've always said that, that you know, they hand you a white apron and they tell you, hey, this is the best it gets.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is it, and
yeah.
So I understand that, Brother Taylor. I think that's you know, I guess I could be polite and say that some in the fraternity wear their titles better than others. I guess that's a polite way to say it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some of them understand what you mean, and some of them, I think Dan referred to that earlier, they just love all that stuff all over them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks, Brother Taylor.
Thanks.
Brother Jimenson.
Yeah, Jimenson. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah.
How are you?
Doing pretty good. Listen to the comments. I can't wait to get the book. Pretty much in the same boat, learning everything on my own, going to the class, Master Builders class. Mike, I was up there with you in District 11 through that class. Been trying to learn as much as I can on my own. And next year they were saying I'm going to be worshipful for my first time and kind of stuck.
Kind of stuck?
Yeah, like trying to learn everything.
Well, yeah, how long you been in? How long you been involved in Masonry, Jay?
Three years.
3 years. I thought it was a short period of time.
I've started at Junior Ward, and I kind of filled in for 1 year because our the gentleman left and moved to Florida, and now I'm Senior Ward, and it looks like next year I'll be Master.
Wow, you have my sympathies because there's so much basic stuff to learn with getting through the ritual and all that. It's really hard to think about, you know, going beyond just meeting the minimum expectations. So you have my condolences on that one. You know, it's going to be important for you to get some assistance and help from anybody you can about just the basics of lodge operation, and then being able to rely heavily on choosing a lodge education officer that's going to be a big part of helping you shape meetings that are good to go by. One of my gripes for a long time has been the fact that if you look in all the books for an agenda for a meeting, there's only one available, and it's in the code, which means everybody thinks you have to do it. But if you read closely, it's a recommended, not required agenda. And I've always felt that that agenda was backwards because it focused on administration up front and education as a footnote. Last year at the Grand Lodge Ed Committee, I proposed having three agendas available, and I'm hoping they're going to make the publications pretty soon, one for a business meeting, one for an education meeting, and one for doing ritual work. And because I think if you're going to do ritual work, you need to open lodge and jump right into the ritual work. You've got a solemn mood. You've done a great opening. Go ahead and move into the ritual work, you know, trying to set a mood of solemnity and then read the minutes and then get back into a good mood for the ritual work is kind of like foreplay, read the paper, and then pick up where you left off. It just doesn't make it, you know?
Right. And there's, and I think I mentioned it, Jay, in the workshop, but on Freemason University, there's some things that
I've been doing all them classes.
Well, the management modules can help you. Meetings people will attend, the dates, times, and places at work, the calendar, term planning, annual planning. Those are a couple that come to mind that will help you. But as Dan said, you're gonna really be studying your brains out, just getting the basics down to run the lodge.
Right.
Are there people, others that you can rely on as mentors to help you with some of that?
Yeah, I have one, the secretary. We go to a lot of the other lodges during the week and been trying to hit every inspection possible that I'm going to be having next year as an apprentice. So we've been visiting the lodges up here that's had the entered apprentice degree.
It's important that you find those brothers in the lodge who know something and delegate to them. Just because you're a master doesn't mean you have to do every single thing yourself. And if
right.
you get them involved by delegating, you know, can so-and-so do the charge? I don't care if they're not an officer, you know, that's even better yet. You know, you can get people involved by breaking the lecture up. You know, if you clear it with your deputy, because some are pretty picky, I don't care, but you can break the entered apprentice lecture into four sections so that four guys give it. One guy gives one part, and then you switch and, you know, just have a good transition, and it works really well, and it gets more guys involved in the lodge, and it spreads the work out over more people, which makes
right.
it easier on you. You're managing, not doing.
Okay. Well, I hope to get this book so I can read it, and I appreciate the time, and talk to
You're
you
welcome.
Later.
You're welcome, brother.
Thank you.
Yeah, and anybody that, you know, that needs some assistance, certainly there's, you know, your district advisors are there, your district deputies are there, and that's what they're there for, is to assist you and point you in the right direction. So, Jay, or anyone on the call, just don't be afraid to reach out, you know? I think that's the beauty of being a part of this fraternity. Everyone wants to help others do better. So,
I have a web page for the Craft Driven Lodge. And
I was going to ask about that. Go ahead, Dan.
So World Wide Web, Craft Driven Lodge, just one long run on word.com. It was in the Beacon that just came out recently. It was the name of the website. And it's got information about the book. It's got other essays and materials I've written that can be very helpful on many questions. It can provide the basis of good programs. And it's also I've also got a Facebook page, The Craft Driven Lodge, where you can send me messages and ask questions and make comments, and you know I can help you better understand something in the book that you may find confusing, or help you come up with a specific strategy for implementing something. The big thing about making changes is if you go too far too fast, you'll scare people. You know, so pick 2, 3, 4 things this year and do them well, and get people to see the value of those things. And then you've got a base to go in and make more changes the next year and more the next as your lodge evolves to the point that it wants to be.
Right. Changes, just remember, change is a big process. And if you can get to what Dan just described, those small changes, incremental changes, pick something small, organize, empower guys to help you, give them responsibility, and then do it with excellence. Do it very well and demonstrate that you can do that. And as you continue to build momentum, just slowly add small things to that. And that's as Dan and all of us know, that's how change occurs. And pretty soon it becomes expected, right, Dan?
Yes, and particularly the maintaining the high quality and the high standards. You know, whatever you do, you need to do with excellence. And I look at that as part of our Masonic teachings. If we want to be masters of our craft, we don't aspire to minimum standards. You know, when I do inspections right now, I say, you passed your inspection. This is not the goal of your year. All it says is you meet minimum standards. The goal of your year is to make your lodge better, and you've got the rest of the year to do that.
Yeah. Well, what I'm going to, you mentioned your website. What I'll do, Dan, is when I post the recording of this call, I will, excuse me, I will put a link on that page to your Facebook page and to your website. I'm also going to do that with Michael's book. I just was thinking about that page today. I need to put some more things on that. So we've been talking about Michael's book and your book now, and we'll hook guys up so they can get to it quickly. We got about 4 minutes to go. Anybody have anything else they would like to bring up? Ask Dan, ask Michael, ask me. Jump in if you do. And while I'm waiting, our next call will be April 15th, believe it or not. So you got to get your tax returns filed so you can be on this call on April 15th. And I got something tickling my throat tonight. I keep coughing. And of course,
Brother
we're on.
I'm sorry, Brother Mike. I just had
a
question.
Oh, I thought you had a question, Michael.
I do. Brother Dan, it's true that the Craft Driven Lodge is only available through McCoy. You can't get it on Amazon or through your website,
right? No, only through McCoy Publishing. Amazon wants way too big a cut, so we're I'm a part of the group of writers that's under contract to McCoy Masonic Publishers and Supply in Richmond, Virginia. So that's the only place to get the book unless you see me personally face-to-face.
Right.
You know, if you have me come in and do a presentation at your lodge, which I'm more than willing to do, my weekends and evenings are starting to get booked up with lodge presentations, but I'd be more than happy to come to your lodge and to do a talk about some aspect of running a lodge, the craft-driven lodge, the concepts behind it. And at those events, you can buy books directly from me. But otherwise, it's only through McCoy.
Well, please let me know if you're ever in the Las Vegas area.
Well, I'm going to be in Austin, Texas in November of 2016. I've already been invited down there.
Wow.
You know, if you want to get four or five lodges together to help, you know, create an event and have me come in as a speaker, I'll be more than happy to do that, and we can, you know, deal with any kind of expenses and all that. But, you know, that's what's happening down in Texas. They've got a group of lodges coming together for a big banquet, and I'm the talk. And I just got back from Toronto, where there's a research lodge, Heritage Lodge, up there, and there was about 75 guys, including three-fourths the Grand Lodge line, all showed up to this talk where they, you know, had me come up and talk about the initiatory experience.
Great. I'm a member of our research lodge out here, so I'll definitely bring that up.
There you go. That sounds cool. Go to Vegas, man. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. See?
That only works if you don't live here.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Well, again, we got about a minute to go. I appreciate Dan very much. You telling us about the Craft Driven Lodge, about the process, and I'll just say the brothers, if you have the opportunity, please visit Arts and Sciences Lodge and experience it firsthand, because they continue to operate in the manner in which Dan described. So again, the next call is Wednesday, April 15th at 7:00 Eastern Daylight Time. And we will have another guest and have a great time. as we continue the process to make ourselves better men and better Masons. So with that, again, Michael, thank you for being on the call again tonight.
Thank you for inviting me.
Keep coming, and thank you, Dan.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
One of my brothers, as I say goodnight, I unmuted everyone, so just say goodnight to your brothers.
Goodnight.
Goodnight.
Goodnight, brothers.
Goodnight.
Goodnight, brothers.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.